Thank you for listening and subscribing to the Brilliance Security Podcast. Hello, my name is Steve Bocut, and I am an editor for Brilliance Security Magazine. Brilliance is an online digital publication dedicated to the security industry. Our mission, and thus our name, is to illuminate the intersection of physical and cybersecurity. We cover both of these security domains by publishing original content about threats, hacks, products, and security strategies. We hope you will enjoy this podcast and visit us at brilliancesecuritymagazine.com. Welcome to the Brilliance Security Magazine podcast. Thank you for joining us. We appreciate your listening. I'm excited about today's show. We've got a fascinating guest today. We're going to be speaking with Mark Gaffin, and Mark is the CEO of Ionix. Ionix is a startup that is redefining attack surface management. So I'm excited to learn a little bit more about Ionix and have a meaningful discussion about attack surface management. So the title of today's show is Attack Prevention, Surface Reduction, and Risk Management. So those are the two areas, I think, that of attack surface management that we're going to focus on. Let me tell you a little bit about Mark before I bring him in. Mark Gaffin is a successful business leader with over 20 years of cybersecurity experience. Mark has led startups to become industry leaders with thousands of worldwide customers. Most recently, Mark was CEO of Hisolate, an endpoint security startup that was acquired by Perception Point. He also served as the co-founder and CEO of Encapsula, a global cloud application delivery service that was acquired by Imperva. And he is, of course, now the CEO of Ionix. So with that, welcome, Mark. Thank you for joining me today.
Hi, Stephen. Thanks very much for having me today.
All right. Well, thank you for being here. I'm really interested in what you have to tell us today. And I think we've got some great questions that we've put together for you. Things that I'm interested in learning. So let's start with kind of a foundation of who Ionix is, size, history, core competency, whatever you think we need to know to have an understanding of what it is and what you do.
Ionix was founded about 5 years ago. We were actually founded under the name of CyberPion. We recently changed our name. With the idea essentially to beat the attackers at their own game. The idea was that the attackers today are moving so quickly and organizations are having trouble essentially keeping up with the level of exposure that we have. And we'll talk about risk management, but in order to manage their risk, they need to manage their exposure. What we found is that if we can build a system that's robust enough, that can find the vulnerabilities, issues, misconfigurations, all the things that essentially attackers are looking for, if we can find them before the attackers find them, and of course, on behalf of our customers, let them know, help them remediate faster, and help them with a key parameter in their security posture, which they call MTTR, which is mean time to remediate, the time it takes them from discovery of an issue to remediate. If we can help them reduce that, we're going to help them reduce their overall risk. And that essentially became and still is our mantra in helping customers. And what we do essentially is we take an attacker's perspective and think of Ionix as a team of 50 attackers that are sitting in a room somewhere and are reconning your environment. They first try and discover all the assets that belong to you. And once they find all the assets that belong to you, they'll try and find all the vulnerabilities that you have or where you've misconfigured something or where you've left a door open. And once they do that, they look at all the ways in that they've found and they say, okay, let me try and figure out where I'm going to enter from based on the likelihood of you discovering me when I enter and where I can reach once I enter from that specific door or window. And I'm of course talking in abstract terms. They'll prioritize where they want to attack you from, and then they'll do it. Our goal is to do pretty much the same thing, but once we've found and prioritized and thought where the attackers are most likely to come in from, prioritize that, so you fix that first.
Okay, so I would be interested in getting your thoughts about this idea of attack surface reduction. So in my mind, at least sometimes when I think about that, I think, well, that's a little bit contrary to your business objectives, right? Your attack surface is what it is. You've got systems and devices and things out there that constitute your attack surface. If I reduce those, now I'm reducing my workforce or my ability to get work done, not workforce as in people, but as in, you know, devices and systems that do the work. So talk to us about that attack surface reduction, what it means, why it's crucial, and how you do it.
Your observation is absolutely correct. It's almost this opposite motion. As our businesses grow and our online footprint essentially grows, so does our attack surface. And that's a given. Attack surface reduction is one of the practices or one of the use cases in which you would use an attack surface management solution to try and help you reduce your exposure to the minimum possible given the business objectives, okay? And if you think of many examples in which we could reduce our attack surface, think of situations in which companies have gone through a transformation to the cloud. So they've had on-prem systems, they've moved to the cloud. They haven't shut off all their old systems, they remain on, they start working with a vendor, that vendor produces something for them, they cut the relationship with that vendor. 2 years later, but no one decommissions some of the services and the infrastructure that was spun up essentially to accommodate for that vendor. We tend to lose, we tend to leave a lot of loose ends open just because we're moving so quickly today. Attack surface reduction is the practice essentially of identifying all those assets that should be essentially decommissioned and decommissioning them or identifying them, because they are often areas in which attackers will take advantage of essentially because of the fact that they're most likely neglected, they haven't been updated, they haven't been patched, someone left some credentials, you know, open. Those are typically very good targets for the attackers, and therefore attack surface reduction is definitely one of the practices or one of the applications of attack surface management.
Okay, so not reducing, you know, what you need to run your business, but probably two things. First of all, understanding what it is you have out there, because I know that that can be a problem, right? There's shadow IT and things that you just talked about that are left out there that not everyone even knows about and they've kind of forgotten about. And then also making sure that those things are configured correctly and that, you know, everything is secure in that sense. So, all right. So let's kind of layer in, if you will, this idea of risk management. So obviously attack surface reduction, that's a risk management play, if you will. What else does Ionix do in that area, and how's it different from other solutions on the market?
So you mentioned the whole notion of what we call discovery, which is understanding, kind of gaining visibility to your entire attack surface. You spoke about shadow IT. I spoke about, you know, things that were potentially should have been decommissioned and shouldn't be, you know, and weren't decommissioned. That's all a very important aspect of typically what we call the attack surface management. And it's, you know, if you think of the challenge around the visibility or essentially inventorying all the systems that you've got, it's really because of the fact that the pace in which organizations are moving today is way faster than it was in the past. Mm-hmm. And our security systems and our control and our governance essentially haven't been able to keep up with it. Think of the move to the cloud. Once upon a time, to spin up a server, you'd have to order that server. It would hit the data center. A couple of weeks later, it would get racked. It would get, you know, connected. Until that all happened, you'd have time to inventory it and make sure that all the processes, you know, processes didn't have to be at lightning speed. Today, you can spin up 1,000 servers with a line of code. You can spin them up in different parts of the world. You contract with contractors. They will do that on your behalf. The pace in which we're spinning up infrastructure is essentially, you know, incredible. And our security systems and our governance essentially have left a lot of the attack surface that we have out of scope. So what attack surface management solutions have typically tried to do is kind of bring everything into scope. So there's one system that essentially is identifying everything, is keeping track of everything, and helping you to gain really good visibility of your attack surface. But this is where the whole concept of risk management comes into place. Just giving you visibility is not enough. And the other thing is, even if we were to tell you about all the issues that you've got across your attack surface, organizations can't fix all the issues that they have today just because of the sheer volume of their infrastructure and their digital footprint. And in order to really be effective, you've got to help them manage risk. Manage risk means typically give me the best bang for the buck that I can get from my security team or from my IT team that are detecting the issues and fixing the issues. I've got a certain capacity. I want you to tell me what are the most important things that I have to fix. And therefore, it's not just about discovering the assets, it's also about finding the issues or the security issues related to the entire footprint that you have and prioritize them very, very effectively so that the mitigation of the issues that you've put up, you know, at the top of that list in order to fix really represents the biggest risks for the organization, and they can mitigate risk in the most effective way. That's really what we believe is the shift. And, you know, you spoke about our slogan of redefining attack surface. It's not just looking at the attack surface, inventorying it and mapping out for an organization. It's also finding all the issues and then prioritizing all the issues effectively so that the organization can really get the best bang for its buck, given the capacity that they've got in order to deal with these security issues.
Yeah, interesting. And obviously this idea of prioritization is crucial and it's important, but let's combine that idea with something else that you mentioned, and that's the, you know, the speed at which things are changing. So this ever-evolving nature of cyber threats, how does one do that? How do you keep your solution adaptive and forward-looking when the threats are changing so quickly? So how do you help your clients prioritize when what they're prioritizing against is changing so quickly?
First of all, we continuously scan our customers' environments. And you would think that, you know, not much changes in a customer's environment on a daily basis, you would be surprised. We constantly discover more assets. We constantly find new security vulnerabilities because people are changing things. They're spinning up new systems, they're changing configurations, they're changing infrastructure in a very big digital footprint that an organization has. Things are moving on an ongoing basis, and we become this safety net that's tracking everything that's going on and is, you know, prioritizing all the findings into a queue that the teams can accommodate in terms of their capacity. That's in terms of the ability or the necessity to deliver the service in a continuous motion, essentially. What we do on our end to keep up to date is, we've got a research team that what they do essentially is they receive different feeds of the most updated vulnerabilities, misconfiguration issues. So there's publications of new vulnerabilities that are discovered. We immediately take them and we essentially build or integrate them into our discovery capability that as soon as they are implemented, we go out and scan everything scan things on behalf of our customers. So if there's a Log4j breakout or outbreak, there's a new, you know, progress move it like there was two months ago episode in which a vendor had a significant security issue that essentially proliferated across multiple, you know, customer or thousands of customers. What we will do is we'll integrate that detection into our engine very, very, very quickly, typically within 24 hours. And immediately our customers can then go and see exactly what the impact or what risk that potential vulnerability now represents to them. I mean, the first thing a CISO wants to do when there's a big, you know, a big zero day announced, CISO will put their, you know, gather their team around the table and say, hey guys, what does this mean for us? Right. And the result or the facilities that we want to enable them to have is to go into our platform and say, okay, someone's gone and scanned our entire infrastructure and mapped it out for us. And what we will typically tell customers is, with this type of infrastructure that you own and control, you have these types of issues. Now, we also look at the attack surface when we can talk about what the attack, what our take is on the attack surface, but our take typically is not just the assets that you own and control, but it's all your internet-facing dependencies, all the systems that you rely on, essentially. And we'll look for these types of vulnerabilities across that infrastructure as well. So we can really give you a good estimation of risk, not just across the assets that you own and that you have control over, but also the third parties that you're using that could potentially introduce risk into your environment. And the goal here is to give instant risk quantification to the organization of the 0 day that's just been announced.
Perfect. All right. So now your challenge then as a CEO is to somehow convey to these clients or maybe prospective clients what that return on investment is going to look like. And I know in security, that's always the big challenging question, because how do you show the value of something that didn't happen? And that's your objective, is to make sure that it doesn't happen. So how do you address that? How do you communicate ROI to your clients?
The approach that we've taken is trying to essentially, I would say, grade their risk. I didn't want to say quantify their risk, because what I found is that the quantification varies from customer to customer, because they've got different assets they're protecting, different, you know, they just have different exposures. And what we've built essentially into our system that helps customers with the ROI question is essentially the ability to benchmark them. Okay, and when I say benchmark, is to give them grades on different topics that are there, which correlate to areas of infrastructure that they have, areas of initiatives that they have. We'll give them an A to an F, hopefully they don't get any Fs, on different, you know, in different areas. So your cloud posture, you got to be, your PKI posture, you got a C, your networking posture, you got an A, and help them essentially benchmark where they are. Using the product over time, hopefully their posturing increases. So it becomes a twofold lever, essentially. One, for the chief security officer to drive the team to fix things and to, you know, to show improvement. And that's kind of how they are measured. But it's also a way to go up to the board level sometimes and say, hey, you know, this is how we've scored. These are the areas that we need to improve. This drives budgets. But look, we've been using a specific product. It's helped us go from a B minus to a, you know, to an A plus. And that's the return on investment that we've got. Trying to quantify that in dollars is typically a challenge, but this in itself gives them the ability to essentially benchmark the improvements that they've gained as a result of usage of the product. The other thing that we often provide them with is industry benchmarks. So if you're a financial services, you're top financial services in the US, we'll give you benchmarks for other organizations. We, of course, are not going to share with you who they are, but we will share the benchmark with you. And then you can see how you're doing versus your peer group. At that stage, you can then go and go to your team and say, hey, here we are ahead, here we are behind, this is what we need to do better, but also go and justify budgets versus the board, because the board want to see, you know, where you are basically, or very often, compared to their peer groups in the industry.
Interesting. Yeah, I can imagine that that's true. All right, cool. So I wanted to ask about common misconceptions about attack prevention and risk management. So, and I don't know if you have any, but if you have any that you can speak to, these common misperceptions, I think that'd be interesting for our audience.
So I would say that, you know, there's this naive notion of why would anyone attack me? Why would anyone attack us? We're not a financial services. There's no money to steal here. You know, we're not a government agency. There's no, you know, nation state stuff to, or there's no, you know, political agenda here. What I think many people today don't realize is that most of the attacks that happen online are actually not targeted attacks. These are automated attacks that the attackers are basically scanning and looking for ways into you know, to arbitrary organizations. And once they find an open door, then it falls into someone that's where the automation stops. And that's where someone looks at what they found and they say, well, you know, that's the door to a top financial services organization. Let's use that then to go and do something, which is, you know, steal data, disrupt them and try and, you know, execute a ransomware attack, conduct phishing types of, you know, of campaigns in order to, you know, to steal credentials from, you know, from their users. So there's an arsenal of attacks that you can, or plots that you can essentially execute by herding this infrastructure. Just, you know, often what you'll find is that the attackers that found that door are not the guys that use that door. Okay, what they will actually do is they will sell that door. And when I say the door, they're not saying the door, they're selling the key basically because they found a key to open that door. They'll sell that on the underground and they say, who's looking for a way to get into XYZ bank? Okay, and someone will say, you know what, I'm actually, I'm looking for a way to get in there because I've got another agenda. And they will essentially trade in the infrastructure that they've been herding essentially in order to facilitate these types of attacks. So they start off as non-targeted often, but they then become targeted once the attacker realizes or is able to sell the infrastructure to someone who actually has a specific agenda with that specific organization. So don't think that if you're not targeted, you won't be attacked. Sometimes it's going to be very opportunistic.
Yeah. And they're certainly not going to avoid attacking you or finding weaknesses or vulnerabilities in your systems, because all at that point they're looking for is just that, weaknesses, vulnerabilities. They don't care what you do on the other side at that point. They'll worry about, you know, what kind of mayhem they're going to carry on once they figure out that they can get in or who they're going to sell that to. Interesting.
Correct.
All right, so
that, you know, you asked me about misconceptions. I think the other misconception that we see often, and I think that security teams are, I would say, starting to overcome this, is this misconception of what doesn't belong to me doesn't essentially constitute part of my attack surface, or there's nothing I can do about it. And what we're seeing today more and more is that more systems that are built today are reliant on subsystems that don't belong to the organization. These are vendors, contractors that have spun up services for them. These is infrastructure that's generally available and they can use. Due to the fact that their systems rely on that, on those types of or that type of infrastructure, any type of vulnerability, misconfiguration, breach of a supplier in that sense essentially can impact them. And I think that more security teams are now realizing that they need to take responsibility, not necessarily for fixing things, but A, understanding where they are exposed. If they are exposed, working with their vendor, notifying their vendor that they are exposed due to something on the vendor side. And if they feel that things are, that, you know, are too critical, essentially disconnect themselves from that vendor in order to mitigate risk. You know, those are the best practices that are being taken today, but it comes from the, you know, debunking this misconception that it's not mine, so therefore there's nothing I can do about it.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I would certainly concur with your perception there that it seems like if you go back just a few years, this whole idea of supply chain vulnerability just kind of snuck up on lots of organizations. They hadn't really realized how vulnerable they are and what their ecosystem even looked like, because you keep adding to it and adding to it, and now your suppliers have suppliers, and you know, it seemed like it grew at such a rate that many people had no understanding of what the threat was until you know, it became obvious that that was going to be an attack chain is through the supply chain. So and I agree that it seems like people are much more aware of that now, but the problem is still huge. I mean, there's it's so complicated that it's hard to get your arms around, I think, for many organizations to know exactly where those vulnerabilities are coming from.
It's very, 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 it's very, very difficult.
Yeah. So I want to try and leave our audience with some, actionable strategies and some things that they can actually do. So is there anything that you can share with our audience, one or two actionable strategies that businesses can do to, improve their security?
So I would say that, first of all, when it comes to your attack surface, don't just focus on visibility into the assets that you own and control. I mentioned that earlier. You've got to start paying attention to the what we are calling the digital supply chain or the infrastructure supply chain, and that's the collection of all the third parties that you're essentially reliant on them, and you need to bring them into your scope. Okay, you need to make sure that you understand where your risks are, what the potential areas or weaknesses are, so that you can address them. You may not be able to fix everything, but you'll be able to put mitigating measures in place in order to mitigate some of the risks. And the second thing is not just looking at the full scope of your attack surface, but also making sure that you've prioritized the most important and critical risks first.
Yeah. What would you, if I asked you to dust off your crystal ball and look into the future a little bit, it'd be interesting, I think, to our audience to get your perception on what you think is coming in the future in, maybe 5 years, or anything that you're seeing now that people could start to prepare for?
I would say that when we look into the future, especially when it comes to controlling or managing your attack surface, the notion of what I mentioned earlier, the digital supply chain is the new frontier of the attack surface. Today, as I mentioned, most modern applications that are being built with modern architectures are by definition relying on APIs and third parties and cloud services. The design goal is to move quickly. So build less yourself, rely on third parties more and more, because that generates that's quicker time to market. There's prognosis is talking about the digital supply chain growing 5x in the next 3 years, which is a significant part of your attack surface is going to be outside of your span of control. You still need to bring that into scope of what you monitor and you accommodate from a risk perspective. That's really our view of the new horizon or the new frontier when it comes to attack surface management.
Yeah, and it seems like that would be such a challenge, is you don't have visibility into their systems and their protections and what they're doing, their policies and procedures, and you don't have control over their systems. So what do you do? I guess you can limit their access into your systems, and you can, have them sign documents and swear on a Bible that this is that they're doing things the right way. And what else can you do?
So there's actually quite a lot that you can do. And having them swear on the Bible and sign documents is something that that kind of existed today. Today you get different services that will rate third parties and try and give them an objective score, and they'll sign a bunch of documents and they'll be compliant for different regulations. But our approach is to actually look at the systems that you are interfacing with and assess the risk of those systems in the exact same way as an attacker would look for holes in those systems. So you don't have to assess the entire environment of a vendor of yours, because not their entire environment or their entire attack surface doesn't always pertain to you. There's components in their attack surface that you're interfacing with that are your kind of immediate connections to. Those are that's the infrastructure that you should essentially be bringing into the scope of your attack surface management program and assessing the risk the same way you would assess the risk at of your own assets. By identifying issues there, you're essentially looking beyond what you own and control, but in the area that essentially can introduce risk into your environment. And then you can implement mitigating measures, either by disconnecting some of the connections, mitigating some of the the connections you have in place for them, notifying them that they have an issue and they can fix it, sometimes just by doing that, they fix it pretty quickly. You've mitigated the risk. Sometimes they didn't know about the issue. The fact that you're looking over your shoulder and you're kind of looking over their shoulder is a good practice.
Yeah, interesting. I like that. So if I was your client, then you would come to me, you would gain an understanding of what my digital supply chain looks like, and then you would go out and see what vulnerabilities that supply chain is presenting, even though I don't have control, but you would at least provide me with some visibility saying, look, here's a potential problem with this part of your digital supply chain. You know, how are we going to mitigate that?
That's exactly correct. The way our system essentially works is once we've identified your digital footprint or the assets that, or your applications, we look for all their dependencies, so all the systems that they are reliant on. Now, some of them are going to be systems that belong to you, and that's how we'll find more and more systems and we'll discover the full extent of your attack surface. But we'll also find systems that don't belong to you. From our perspective, we don't care. We'll obviously tell you if it belongs to you or if it doesn't belong to you, but we'll look for vulnerabilities in systems that essentially span outside of your control in order to notify that you are potentially vulnerable from a third-party system, and then you can take action. Some of the actions you can take yourself, some of the actions we, in fact, can implement in order to fix things as you've made connections to external systems, and some things the vendor itself, they themselves can fix if you can get in touch with them quickly enough.
Yeah, interesting, fascinating, okay. All right. Well, it looks like we're about out of time. This has been really fascinating and I appreciate it. So we want to end with a very open-ended question, and it's designed that way. The essence of this question is, what should I have asked that I failed to ask? But the question is there anything else, or what else do you think our audience needs to know, either about attack prevention or about Ionix?
So I think that I'll kind of reiterate, I think it's, again, not just focusing on visibility, but also focusing on the importance and criticality of issues that are present across your attack surface. Today, the biggest challenge is, how do we find the most critical things that we need to fix? Don't just focus on the visibility, focus really on the most exploitable risks that you need to fix.
Excellent. Thank you. Good advice. All right, Mark, thank you so much for being with us today. It's been a pleasure, and I appreciate your time. A big thanks
to be on the show.
You bet. And a big thanks to our listeners for being with us. And please remember to like and subscribe if you find this podcast interesting, and join us next time for another episode of the Brilliance Security Magazine podcast.